what do you think your superpower is as the founder of Creation?
I don't know what to call this superpower, but I cannot be flooded with information, meaning you cannot overwhelm me with information. So I can take in like huge amounts and then simplify and make sense of it. And that works inside of actually what we do. Like I can take someone's not so great course, right? Shift it all up, simplify it, make it better, make it easier, and then spit it back out. And I can also do that when I'm thinking about business development. So I can look at all the various options that you can use to sell, market, create an offer, etc. I can take it all in.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having on the line Jasmine Jonte. Jasmine, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome. So glad to have you here, Jasmine. I know we always, at the beginning of these episodes, like to find out, where are you calling in from? Where's home for you?
Phoenix, Arizona.
So it was warm there?
Yeah, dry, hot desert. I love it.
I am a desert baby myself, so I grew up in Southern California, and I'm convinced that water freezes at 32 degrees, but Richard freezes at 65. Anything lower than that, and I'm really cold. And I always tell our audience, because we travel full time, where we're at. And so we're currently in Iowa visiting some friends. That's why if you're a regular watcher of the show, you probably don't recognize the studio. It's my friend's studio. It's 27 degrees the other day, and it went from 60 degrees to 27 and then 23. And now it's back up to 60 again. And I was like, I am not built for 27 degrees.
You and me both. Yeah. Way too cold for me. I'd be out of there, but hopefully you're having fun.
Yeah, we're having a good time. But yeah, if you're a Phoenix, Arizona baby, like your desert baby as well, your blood probably freezes at much higher temperatures.
Yeah. Brad, my husband, he jokes that there's 3 degrees within which I'm comfortable. So not too hot, not too cold. There's 3 degrees right around 70 where Jasmine is
minus perfectly comfortable. 72 plus or minus about 3 degrees on either side.
Yeah,
and then I'm a good happy camper. That's what the desert is for. Anyways, what I want to start with then is I want to just get in and do a brief introduction to who you are so my audience knows who you are, and then we'll dive into your story. So Jasmine Jonte is the founder of Creation, the done-for-you course creation agency. The Creation team is on a mission to create world-class programs that inspire, educate, and convert through partnering with both new creators seeking to productize their expertise and experienced creators looking to revamp their programs. Creation does all the heavy lifting, to turn brain dumps and interview time into programs with wow factor. So Jasmine couples her teaching experience from Detroit, Michigan, and her business savvy to get both transformative results for students and businesses like higher completion, repurchase, and referral rates. When she's not immersed in program builds, Jasmine enjoys hanging out with her rescue pit bull, Juniper Olive, dining at the best vegan hotspots, and watching Ted Lasso with her now husband.
Yes.
Awesome. So with that brief introduction, I want to start off with what you're known for today. This question really sets up who you are, what your business is like, and like, who do you serve? What do you do for them?
Yeah, I mean, we're known for end-to-end product development. And we mostly serve, I would say, sold-out service providers. So lawyers, doctors, therapists, coaches, consultants, speakers, people who have a service that they do for a living. And they want to get leverage on their time by productizing what they know. But they don't have any time, right? Because they're always in client delivery. So they come to us and basically outsource their course so that we can build it for them. So that's really what I'm known for. We also work with some established course creators who have a flagship program or product and they want to upgrade it, right? And so they'll also come to us. But I'd say like, you know, 7 out of 10 of our clients are the newer folks who are just doing this for the first time.
So I think it's going to be a really fascinating conversation because I think some of my audience knows this, and I know you know this because we've talked before. My past life was a course creator. The instructional design and everything that goes into that is something that is near and dear to my heart. One of the things in your introduction, completion rates, man, that is like one of those things that if you don't know how to teach, you can be an expert at something, but not know how to teach the thing that you're an expert at. I call that expert blindness. I'm not sure what you call it. Being really good at something doesn't mean that you're really good at passing that knowledge on to someone else so they can get the same results. So bringing in someone like you and your team to be able to take that expertise and turn it into something that really helps someone else, like that requires the content to be good and engaging so they can actually understand it and then complete the course. And then not just complete the course, but get the result that the course promises. And that's a whole different skill set than being good at a thing. Whatever that is. And it's a fascinating world to be in. And I always hint it to, it's not just teaching, it's persuasive teaching, right? And because your goal is to get someone to go through that training and then change who they are and how they act as a result. And so I want to get your thoughts on how what you do fits into just the overall world of business and how people should be thinking about course creation, and particularly that idea of creating content and creating courses that actually get high completion rates and then good results for people. Like, how does that work in your head?
Yeah, I love what you said about persuasive teaching, because that's exactly it. It's not just they bought your program and that's enough. It's like we market and sell to people so hard to get them to say yes to our product. And then once they're in, we don't market to them to have them finish the dang thing and get the result. And you have to keep that marketing hat on all the way through. You just pivot your angle. Instead of marketing to them to buy, you're marketing to them to finish. So yeah, I love that idea of persuasive marketing or persuasive teaching. We use neuro-linguistic programming, and that's unique selling props, right? It's a bit of our special sauce for how we get students engaged, interacting, and moving through the content, taking action and getting the results. So that's a really big part of what we do. And I also just think the skill of instructional design, that alone makes programs so much better. Because if you don't know that, then you're not thinking about reverse engineering. You're not thinking about what's the action step they're going to take. Usually those experts who don't have the skill of teaching, they come in and think, what can I teach? Not what are they going to do with what I'm teaching?
Yeah.
And you look at every piece of content completely differently when you come from a teaching background and that teacher perspective. I liken it to a filing cabinet. So if you think about a filing cabinet with 100 files in there, if you're teaching one-on-one, it's really easy to go in and pull out the exact file that one person needs. However, when you take that to group, and especially when you're not there to see their responses, to gauge their reaction, you have to know which of those 100 files to include. It's probably about 10 of them, and what order and sequence to put them in. And that's the challenge that instructional design can solve. And so I think a lot of people come to me very overwhelmed because they are looking at that filing cabinet with 100 files, and they do have prior experience where that one client was really served by that one thing they said one time. But the truth is, for the majority of their students, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So they struggle to see like what should go in, what should be left out. If it is going in, how do I make it actionable? How do I make it easy for them to use and get the result? Because I do believe that it is on the expert and the expert's team to make the work easy. Yeah, it's on your students to do the work, but it's on you to make the work easy to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answered
it. Yeah, it does. And it opens up a whole like sort of can of worms, because instructional design is one of those things that like you don't know you need it until you have a problem that you don't know how to solve. And someone else looks at it and goes, you have an instructional design problem. Right. It's just one. It's an interesting sort of world to be in. And I have a story that I just want to share with you, because you probably have seen this a lot. Right. So one of my first instructional design client, like 11 years ago, was a real estate educator. Right. And so he helped people invest in real estate properties. And he had a very specific process that was like, hey, we buy properties wholesale from Fannie and Freddie, and then we sell them retail into the local investor market. Right. Very niche kind of thing. Making a lot of money, right? He was doing 200 grand plus a month in revenue for his own company. And he's like, I want to teach other people how to do this, because I'm only serving a couple of these small markets. There's a lot of opportunity here. And I think we can, you know, add a profit center to our business by adding education, right? Which is a pretty normal thing for businesses to do. It's like, totally, hey, we have our service, let's add an education wing. And so he built his first educational product, and he did it himself. And so what he built was I don't even know what you call it. It was an incredibly comprehensive, everything you could ever possibly want to know about running a real estate business. Everything. Hiring, processing, all the thing, like every single aspect of the business that he did today was all in this course. And I was interested in real estate at the time, and I bought his course and I went through it. And my first thought was, I have no idea what to do. I understand every aspect of your business, but I don't know what to do next. Because he's not an instructional designer. He was a real estate educator. He was a real estate investor. That's what he did. And I was like, I reached out to him and I was like, your course is got lots of good information in it. There's nothing wrong with the information. It's good stuff. But I was like, but it's not taught in a way that someone like me can actually follow through. And I was like, do you find that being a problem with your students? And he was like, yeah, I've only got about a 10% completion rate on the course. And I don't understand why. And I was like, well, 10% completion rate on the course, what's your success rate of people who actually go get their first deal? He's 3% of those people. And he's like, but my process is good. It works. Every time I do it, it works. And so I was like, can we restructure the course design? And so we went through the whole instructional design process, which if you want to know how to do that, reach out to Jasmine. I don't do it anymore. It's a lot of work. But we redid his whole program and his completion rates went to 86%. And his success rates of those people who completed it went up to, again, almost 82, 83% of people completed their first real estate transaction. And then his education business went from being about $1,200 a month in revenue to over $250,000 a year in revenue in about 6 months, right? And that's just because he brought instructional design in. It was one of those things that he had no idea the problem was instructional design. So do you see that regularly? Things like that happen for businesses?
Oh, big time. Big time, especially if they're not familiar with an Ascension model or an offer suite. Because when I see programs like what you just described, I think there's actually three programs here. Oh. It's not that the content is a problem necessarily. Yeah, there's things we need to fix about it, but it's just too much. And so going through a weight loss journey, and if you're 100 pounds overweight and someone's like, I'm going to help you become a fitness competitor. It's too far. It's not believable to the client. So instead it's, okay, well, what's the first milestone? What's the first program they're going to get into? Maybe it's getting your first property, right?
Yeah, that's what we ended up doing. It's how to close your first property in 60 days. And that was it, right?
Yep.
And then it opened up the problem. It was like, okay, now you've closed your first property. What's the next problem that you have? That's how he built the whole rest of his education business.
Or whatever. Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of times it's just taking this really big, transformation and just breaking it down into milestones. And sometimes that means splitting it up into different programs. But yeah, I see it all the time, especially for folks that are true experts, like what you're saying. He had a huge track record. He's done really amazing things, incredible revenue, probably has dozens and dozens of properties, right? And so they have so much experience. It's almost like the more expert you are, the harder it is to do a program, because the more knowledge and experience you have to decipher through, to figure out what goes in and what goes out.
What are the things that someone who's new to this needs to know, right? And also, it's been so long since they've been new that they don't even always remember what it's like to be a beginner, right? Mm-hmm. And so they'll teach something and they'll not realize the assumptions that they're making in the teaching. So when someone else watches it and they go through that and they'll be like, it's great that you said all of those things, but there was this one thing that you assumed I knew that I don't. And so therefore everything else you said made no sense to me. Mm-hmm. Right. And I see that a lot in instructional design. And if you're watching this and you've ever been through a course, where you go through the whole thing and you get to the end of the course and you're like, I know I learned things, but I can't actually do anything with it. The problem that course has is instructional design. It's not that the content wasn't good. It's that it wasn't structured in a way that was designed for you to have that persuasive learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I often see experts struggle with, because they're not beginners anymore, another layer to that is things have changed since they were a beginner. So if he was a beginner in the real estate market in the 90s, and now he's teaching people to do it for the first time in 2024, there are some things that have changed, which means there's a lot of the stuff from the beginning of your journey that they might not need to do anymore, and some stuff that they need to do that you didn't need to do. So it's understanding what, if I was starting now, what would I do differently, and making those shifts rather than just teaching it the way you did it because it's the way you did it.
Yeah, absolutely. So fascinating business that you're in. I love it a lot. What I want to talk about, though, is I want to talk about your origin story. How did you get here, right? Every good comic book hero has an origin story. It's a thing that made them into the hero they are today. And we want to hear that story. Were you born a hero, or did you get bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to get into instructional design and helping people build courses and programs? Or did you start in a job and eventually move to becoming an entrepreneur? Basically, how did you get to this point where you started the creation agency?
I started teaching. So everything that I do today is a direct result of my education experience. So I taught in the lowest performing school in the country in Detroit, Michigan. And I never considered entrepreneurship. I did not have a single person in my life who owned a business, like not even a friend of a parent or like literally no one. There was not one person who was an entrepreneur, owned a business, worked for themselves, self-employed, like none of it. So I went through the typical, you know, you go to school, you go to college, you get a good job, you know, you get into programs, whatever. And I landed a teaching job in Detroit, Michigan. And I was there for 3 years. I taught a fourth year in Nashville. And around year three, I realized like, I can't do this forever. I cannot do this forever. Like, this is exhausting and heavy and a lot. And like, I want more from my life. Not that, you know, teaching I think is like the most noble career because lifelong teachers are just angels walking on earth, in my opinion. And I couldn't hack it as a lifelong teacher. And so I would say that, yeah, I did get, you know, I got bit by some kind of bug. I'm not totally sure. I don't think it was radioactive, but like, I hopefully. Did get bit. Sorry.
Hopefully it wasn't radioactive.
Hopefully it wasn't radioactive. I think I got bit by, let's just say, the design your life bug. And, you know, it became known to me that through a friend who was in a business that I could potentially work for myself, make my own income and not have to go into work and stay at home with my dog. And once they said you can stay at home with your dog, I was like, I am all in. So that is where I got started. And eventually that grew within me and grew within me and grew within me until I said, okay, I'm going full time in my business. And before I started doing agency work that I do now, I was coaching, consulting, building my own programs, essentially. So what I do now for other people, I first did for myself, had my own students, had my own completion rates, had my own retention rates. And then I pivoted out to doing it for other people when I realized how many people struggle with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as someone who came from a world with like just no entrepreneur background, how was that transition for you going from, you know, like, because everything in your life and your experience was all employee. And all of your friends, family, everything, they're all employees. What was that like for you to step out on your own and become an entrepreneur and sort of like, I don't know, you know, with to quote Spider-Man, right? You know, with great power comes great responsibility. What was that like for you to move into that world of an entrepreneur with, at the beginning, I would imagine, not much of a support network?
It was exciting. It was really exciting. It was invigorating. It was satisfying. And I think a lot of it was the fact that when I started, I was still in my job, right? And I'm working this side hustle. And there was so much about my day that I couldn't control, but this was in my control. Like doing my business activities was in my control. Reading my personal development book was in my control. And so I took a lot of just satisfaction from the idea of I'm working on it and I might not get there in a day and I might not get there in a year and I might not get there in a decade, but like I will get there eventually. And I just let that guide me. Yeah. I'm also fortunate in the fact that my parents, while entrepreneurship is not something they were comfortable with or excited about because it meant a lot of uncertainty and they are lifelong career professionals. However, they saw how much I was struggling in my job and they saw how much this made me happy. And so for that reason, they supported me.
Yeah.
So I did have like a lot of, you know, emotional, mental support from my parents being like, you can do it, girl. Like, you got this. Though it did, I think inside they were terrified for me. They were also excited for me.
I have the same kind of thing. My parents are incredibly supportive of me just in general. And like my mom is, she will listen to this episode. So she will hear this at some point. And so she's one of the first people that like watches every podcast that we put out and is like one of the first people to comment on and share the stuff that we do and whatnot. I know because, you know, I've been doing this entrepreneur stuff for, you know, 15, 20 years at this point, yeah. That early on, she was like, I support you in doing whatever you want to do, even if I think what you're doing is crazy, which is not the words that she would have used. But like, right, she's like, I support you because you're my son and I see this makes you happy and that you're enjoying it, even if I don't understand it. And, you know, and nowadays, like the same kind of thing with my dad. And my dad is at this point, you know, He's like, I still don't think I understand what you do, but I'm proud of you for like the work that you put in and like the way that you help people and that kind of thing. Because, you know, not a lot of people get that the opportunity to grow up in the entrepreneurship. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy about running this podcast and talking to people like you is there's a lot of people out there who want to get that side hustle started and want to move from that entrepreneur quadrant, or sorry, the employee quadrant into either the self-employed or the business owner quadrants. There's a lot of, I don't know what you'd call it, like uncertainty, fear about that. And being able to see someone who's successfully gone through that transition is really, I think, valuable.
Yeah. And I think it's all about just trying it. Like, I had this belief that everything was figure outable.
Yeah.
Like, I knew I had gotten to this point in my life and I had figured out everything I'd figured out. And I'd been through some stuff in my 20s and then into Detroit. Like, that was the hardest decade of my life. And I think also when you have that perspective of something you've been through that's harder, it just helps entrepreneurship seem easier. You know, everyone's always like, oh, entrepreneurship is the hardest thing in the world. And I'm like, no, like try teaching where I taught. That shit was so much harder than getting up every day and, you know, click clacking on a keyboard. Like, right?
I laugh about that because I'm like, entrepreneurship is not, I wouldn't describe it as easy, but.
Correct.
But like, we're also like, we're knowledge workers. I get paid for what comes out of my brain through my keyboard or through a camera, right? And it's not backbreaking labor. It, a lot of times it's not emotional labor. Like the kind of stuff that you do in the schools is probably very emotional labor and physical labor. Like there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. And I said, not easy for sure, but certainly not as difficult as a lot of other things that you could be doing.
Absolutely. So I thought about that too in the very beginning, like, oh, this is nothing compared to what I do all day. And so I think the perspective helps in just believing everything is figure outable.
Yeah. Yeah. So just for, you know, for those people who are probably looking at that, I want to get like a high level view. What's your business look like now? Like, is it just you? Do you have a whole staff? Like, how big is your agency? How many clients do you serve on a yearly basis?
So we have 12 on the team. And a few of them are like full-time W-2'd employees. And then we have, I don't know, a handful of contractors that work 15 to 20 hours a week. And then we have a few that we just pull in as needed. So, you know, but I mean, I talk to 12 people a week, right? Yeah. So I talk to 12 team members a week. And yeah, you know, it's pretty incredible to see how the organization has grown. When I just got started, I could work with one, maybe two clients at a time, right? Because it was just me doing the work. And you know how many hours go into building a program. I mean, people think like, oh, I can just knock my program out in a week. And I'm like, whoa there. Like for it to be good and knock it out in a week, that's some magic sprinkle pixie dust there that I do not have and would like to have. So, and now we work with like anywhere between 6 and 10 clients at a time. It just depends on where they are in our process, because there's some parts of our process that are a lot more intensive than other parts of our process. Oh. So yeah, I'd say we usually have about 10 clients on just in various stages. And this year, I'm going to scale it a little bit more. I've kind of been on the scaling journey as slow is smooth and smooth is fast. Like I would rather grow a little slower and give my team certainty in their positions and like build a really healthy business. You know, like super high risk is just not me. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs will, especially masterminds and podcasts, and you hear these big people talk like, go faster, get money, you know, get capital, raise the funds, do the thing. And it's just, I'd rather go slow as smooth as fast for me.
That's actually something that my martial arts instructor tells me like every single day for like the stuff that we're learning. He's like, slow as smooth, smooth as fast. Or actually he adds another one in there. He's like, slow as smooth, and then smooth as fast, and fast is good. So like, that's how you get good, is by getting going slow and getting it all smooth. I have sort of the same mentality. And like, we're just now getting to the point where we're going to the fast portion, which scares me a little bit, because we're like 5 years into the slowest, you know, the slowest smooth kind of thing. And we're getting to the point where like, okay, we've got all this stuff figured out where we can like pour some gasoline on this fire in our agency. I'm a little bit terrified about it, but also like, that's the next step. And it's really exciting. You know?
Yeah, I can see us being there like toward the end of the year. It's just, I think, especially with agencies, like I don't I haven't run every other kind of company, so I don't know how that works. But I know with agencies, like if your systems aren't dialed in, if your delivery isn't on point, that anytime you just add more, it gets way worse. So I think for us specifically, like, yeah, it's the right play. And then, it's like the hockey puck.
I went from 2019 when we started the Push Button Podcast Agency to the beginning of 2023 with, it's not like flatline, but really slow growth intentionally. Mm-hmm. And we spent so much time building systems and building processes, hiring, deliverables, onboarding, just all these things. And then I was like, hey, we could start moving on to the fast side. And then we 8x our company in 2023, yeah, which is nuts. And we're probably we're probably not going to 8x it again, because you can't like 8x and 8x and 8x. That'd be nuts.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we'll probably double the company before summer from the beginning of the year, which is still crazy. So we're we're at the beginning of that fast stage where we're like, and I can tell just looking at where we're at that, like, we're not even to the hockey stick upgrowth. We're just on that beginning of that corner.
That little corner.
And I'm like, and it's already terrifying. But, and every single, every new level that we hit in the business, I'm like, oh, there's a whole new set of problems I didn't know I needed to know about.
True. That's so true. My mentor talks about it as the ones, the threes, and the eights. So, when you get to $100,000, like, you have a viable business, right? And then 300,000, 800,000, 1 million, 3 million, 8 million. Like, those are the benchmarks where something needs to change, the constraint changes, and you have to shift something. Yeah. So I think like that's always fascinating to hear, because once you get through a couple of those, then it's like you just know what to valve to turn, and then zhoop, you're on to the next.
That's actually really good to know, because like we just hit the so we went from the big growth for us was like the 100,000 to 300,000. We went from doing about 100,000 a year to doing like 360,000 a year, and I was like, whoa. And then it's like we had to make a bunch of shifts at the 360,000 so that we
all processes and people,
yeah,
right there,
so that we could get to and so we're on our way to the 800,000 probably, and we'll probably hit the million. Like, we'll probably slide right past 800,000 into the million this year, and then we'll have to do the same thing. Where like I can already see it, and so it's useful to know. You know, it's like, hey, 300,000, 800,000, 1 million, 3 million. Man, it's gonna be a fun ride. But it's that the thing that's fascinating to me is I did the same thing, right? Started in a job, built an agency, real slow. And I think one of the things that I think is really useful for at least younger entrepreneurs to know, and something that I wish someone had told me early on, is that like, if it's worth doing, it's worth putting the next 10 years of your life into, right? And I know like the first 4 or 5 years of being in business, I was like, I want it to go faster. I want things like, I want to be rich today, right? Not in 10 years from now, right? And it's just not the way you build a sustainable company that's really providing value in the marketplace, right? That's making people's lives better. And so I spent probably 5 years, I don't even want to say like vacillating, because that's not the right word, but like not really having a sure footing under me, because I wasn't putting in the 10-year effort. I was putting in the how do I make this go faster thing, and then getting nowhere because of it. And it wasn't until I was like, okay, I need to actually think about how do I build a business that will be bigger in, bigger and more successful and more helpful to the world at large in 10 years, that I'm willing to put in that effort, that we really started to grow.
Yeah. It's like once you surrender to patience, everything speeds up.
Oh, strange.
So weird, but it's so true. We all go through, it's like an entrepreneur rite of passage. When you first get in and you're like, I'm going to make $1 million in a year. And then it just doesn't happen. And you're like, well, now what?
You're like, oh, I must suck. You don't suck. You're just doing the wrong thing. Right.
Yes. And sometimes you need to do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to do the wrong thing to figure out what's the right thing.
One of my early mentors used to tell me, he's like, we vastly overestimate what we can accomplish in a year and vastly underestimate what we can accomplish in 10. And so that was a really big thing for me, is like, I heard that and I knew it like up here the whole time when I was not listening to that advice. And it wasn't until I actually like it got into my heart and I was like, oh, I see what he means.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I spent probably 4 or 5 years vastly overestimating what I could accomplish in a year, and then didn't accomplish anything over those 5 years and flatlined for a long time until we really started to grow. Next question I have for you is about your superpowers, right? So every iconic hero has a superpower, whether that's a fancy flying suit made by your genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with, or that you developed over the course of your career that really energize all your other skills, right? And the way I like to frame it for my guests is if you look at all the skills that you developed over your career, there's probably a common thread that ties those skills together. And that common thread is probably where your superpower is. So what do you think your superpower is as the founder of Creation?
I don't know what to call this superpower, but I cannot be flooded with information, meaning you cannot overwhelm me with information. So I can take in like huge amounts and then simplify and make sense of it. And that works inside of actually what we do. Like I can take someone's not so great course, right? Shift it all up, simplify it, make it better, make it easier, and then spit it back out. And I can also do that when I'm thinking about business development. So I can look at all the various options that you can use to sell, market, create an offer, et cetera. I can take it all in and then direct people to the right path for them. Is that a superpower?
I have a theory, and I'm curious if this is true. So I think you probably have the ability to see the systems behind things. Would you say that's true?
Yes.
So the only reason I say that is because it's very similar for me, right? Where you just take in a vast amount of information because you're not actually seeing and processing the information. What you're doing is you're seeing the frameworks and you're seeing the system that information exists in. And where it fits and doesn't fit into the actual system, you can just be like, oh, that needs to go over here. This needs to go over here. Because you're not processing the information. You're processing the system behind it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah, it's something that took me forever to figure out like sort of where my superpower lies because it's very similar. And I found that it, for me at least, instructional design was a really good fit for me, but I never really wanted to get into it from an agency perspective. But what I found is that like it also works really well for building SOPs and the systems and processes behind running a business. And like that's where I get a lot of energy. Like when I get a good system in place, I'm like, that's a little heartthrob going on there.
Oh yeah. Big time.
There's a little swoon. Like when I put a system in place and it just works all the way through, I'm like, oh, it's my baby. So that I don't have a name for it either. I just call it systems thinking. And that is, I think it's a really interesting superpower because not a lot of people share that particular superpower, right? Mm. Things like empathy are a lot more common. And so we talk about that a lot in this show. And so there's a lot of things. I've talked to maybe 4 or 5 people over the course of 250 episodes who have that particular skill of being able to see the systems behind things. Drives my wife bonkers, by the way, because she's like, you don't see what everyone else sees in the world. And like, just like a really, off the wall example of that. I don't watch movies the way normal people watch movies. And you may or may not be like this, but like I'll watch a movie and the things that I'll comment on to my wife is like the kind of lights they're using to light the scene.
The
camera angles that they're using and how that camera angle is making this particular type of emotion and why they chose that and why they're switching from this type of shot to that type of shot. My wife is like, can't you just enjoy the movie? I'm like, that's how I enjoy the movie.
Yeah. Brad is often like, do you always zoom out like that? He says zoom out because he's like, oh, it's like the layer behind what's happening. I do that, but then similarly with like TV writing, like TV episodes specifically, like the patterns that they use from episode to episode and picking out, I can always predict what's going to happen because I've seen the pattern that's happened from the other episodes. And I'm like, oh, they're a bad guy. And Brad's like, what are you talking about? They're not a bad guy. And sure enough, at the end, they're the bad guy.
Always, right.
So sometimes with like camera shots, camera angles, colors, like things like that, but also the writing,
all the systems, right? Because that's just what you see. You see the systems that are being used, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're not like you're processing the story, but not the same way that like, I say normal person, but like it's not normal, abnormal. It's just like that's the way your brain works. And if you haven't seen it yet, the movie Knives Out.
I've seen it.
Yeah. There's a line in there where the 007 character, I can never remember his name, Daniel Craig. I think that's it. He's like, I just follow the arc of the story and it inevitably lands at the truth. And I'm like, that's how I see the world, right? Because I see all these systems. And if you're seeing the back end stuff, like you always just inevitably land at the truth. And, that comes out differently. Like in the movie, you can always figure out who the bad guy is, which my wife is like, you just shut up about who the bad guy is. I don't want to know. I want to be surprised. And I'll be like, so now what I've gotten into the habit of doing is we'll get like 10 or 15 minutes into the movie. I'm like, have you figured out who the bad guy is yet? And she's like, no. And I'm like, I have. She's like, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. And then so our discussion at the end generally is like, okay, when did you figure it out? And what made you figure it out and why? Because like, yeah, it's never the same thing, because she's more of a social intuitive type of person. So like, she's seeing the interactions with the people, and I'm seeing like the storytelling and the and like how they're putting the things together to get to the same conclusion. So anyways, that's where.
So fun.
Yeah. It's an interesting superpower, and we share it, I think.
Yeah, I think we do. I think we do. Yeah.
So the flip side then of your superpower is, of course, your fatal flaw, right? And you know, just like every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. You probably have a flaw that's held you back, right? A lot of times it's the flip side of your superpower, you know, something you struggled with. For me, it's perfectionism. I'm very into the like, I could always make it a little bit better before we ship it, and then never ship it. And then if you never ship it, you've never actually done anything. So it's a pretty low standard to hold yourself to, actually. And then the other one that I struggled with for a long time, and still sometimes do, is not having good boundaries, right? Not having good boundaries with my time, not having good boundaries with my clients, and, you know, that sort of lack of that discipline. And so like, I've had to work on overcoming a lot of those things. But I think more important for you than what is the flaw is, how have you worked to overcome it, so our audience might learn a little bit from your experience?
Yeah, so many flaws. I could pick so many. I think one thing is, if you consider the systems thinking, I like everything. I like to know where everything fits. And I'm always wondering, what am I missing?
Yeah.
And sometimes that stalls me from taking massive action. So I'm very good at like taking action, moving the ball forward, you know, like I'm literally seeing a football field in my head, just like 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, you know, just like literally moving the ball down the field. But I wish sometimes I could just do the Hail Mary and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's because I like to see the big picture and all the little pieces and how it all fits together. And then I take steps forward.
Yeah.
So if I think about business specifically, that might be my fatal flaw. But the truth is, I don't know, because I've never really tried the Hail Mary. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I have done Hail Marys before. It's just very seldom. So I don't have a whole lot of data to work with to know if that actually would be a better option or not.
It's interesting. I have, you know, one of my mastermind buddies, it's actually the guy that we're visiting their house right now. I'm using his studio. Yeah. He's sort of the opposite of me, where he'll do a lot of the other stuff where he's like, I know you want to have all the data and all the pieces in place before you take action, but sometimes you just need to take action and figure out where they fit along the way. And because like, I'll do that where I'm like, I need to figure out the whole system before I can do anything. And he's like, you're not going to be able to figure out that part of the system until you get there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, one of my biggest problems for like our agency, and I don't know if you've experienced something similar to this, was like, I had our deliverable system nailed, right? Because we got a lot of at-bats for our deliverable system. Because every client we had, we're doing the same thing for them every week, week in, week out, week in, and week out. And so even with two or three clients, we could really nail that system. Our onboarding system, however, right, you only get to onboard one client one time.
Yeah.
And he was like, you're not going to be able to build a perfect onboarding system without onboarding more clients. And I was not letting myself onboard more clients because I didn't have a good onboarding system in place. And he was like, you need to go and close more deals so that you can run people through the system and see where the problems are and build it as you go. Mm-hmm. And I was so resistant to that because I want to build all the things and have all the data and build all the systems in place ahead of time. And so like, yeah, that's how I had to just, you know, do the Hail Mary. Let's close 10 clients and then run them all through this system. Yeah. That's not all the way I would like it to be. And then fix it as we go, which stresses me out a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I really am a firm believer that you need to take action to get clarity rather than have all the clarity to take action. I think in that scenario, I just would have done the thing where I onboarded like one at a time, rather than just like, I'm going to go get 10 clients right now, you know? And that to me is the Hail Mary that I fall down on, is like swing real big. I'm just like, let me get some base hits. Yeah. What is with the sports metaphors today? Like, I'm not even a sports person, but whatever, they're coming. So I'm laying them down.
Yeah, that's the one side of that. And then the other side for the fatal flaw for me is, I like to figure things out, and figuring things out is my favorite. And then I have figured it out, and then I don't care anymore. And I'm curious if you struggle with the same kind of thing. And so like, for me, I had to find people who liked to implement on the things that have been figured out regularly, right? A really good ops person, which again, they'll watch this episode. That's Brooke on my team. She's fantastic. She's that person that like, I figured this thing out. It's now yours. Because after I figured out, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I definitely have some of that for sure. But there is also things that I don't have any interest in figuring out.
Yeah.
So like there are, I mean, depends kind of what my interest in the thing is, but there's definitely parts of the business, like a data, like email data tracking. I want the data. I want to optimize, but I don't want to go figure out the tracking system for it. So some of that I will pass off, but there's definitely an element to, I don't really like to do repetitive things.
Yeah. I am really good at building systems that do repetitive things and then giving those systems to other people. So my wife jokes that I owe her $3 million. And the reason I owe her $3 million is because early in our entrepreneurial career, anytime I ran into something that was repetitive and I couldn't afford to hire someone else to do it, I'd be like, hey, Karen, I've got this thing that needs to get done, but it's just like mind-numbingly repetitive. And my wife thrives on mind-numbingly repetitive tasks. So, you know, she crochets, and crocheting, like, I would rather gouge my eyes out with a dull, rusty spoon than do the same stitch 100,000 times to make a blanket. But she's made hundreds of blankets and it makes her happy. And like, that's just one example. She's got lots of things that she's very into the repetitive tasks, and she thrives and it gives her energy and it makes her happy and she's in her element. God love people like that, because it is not me.
Yeah, it is not me either.
It's their superpower. That's why we have to have an Avengers team, right? You got to have all the people who have their different superpowers.
Absolutely.
So I want to shift gears then. I know we talked about superpowers, fatal flaw. I want to talk about your common enemy, right? And your common enemy is every superhero has their arch nemesis, right? It's the thing they constantly have to fight against in their world, right? In the world of business, it takes on a lot of forms, but we like to put it in the context of your clients, right? And it's a mindset or a flaw that they come to you with that you have to fight to overcome in order to actually get them the result that you promised them in the first place. So in the world of instructional design, what is that common enemy that you have to regularly fight to overcome in your world?
There's two coming to mind. One is perfectionism, because just like with building a business, when you build a product, you're always going to want to make it better if you actually really care about your students. But if you don't get it out there in the first place, there's nothing to make better. So people come to me saying, I have had this idea for years. I have had this fleshed out outline for years, like literally 3 years, 4 years. And I just haven't put it out there because it's not, you know, 100% perfect yet. And I'm just like, that's not real. If you're looking for perfection, you're never going to put it out. So I'd say number one is perfection. We have to fight that together. And the second is the idea that marketing is always icky. So there's a lot of bro marketing out there, right? Like, we know this to be true. We've seen all the meatheads and bro marketers. Cool. However, to make a digital product really work online, you have to be a marketer in some way, shape, or form to scale. And so the challenge my clients have is they see all these bro marketers. They want the business results. They want the income. They want the impact. But they're unwilling to market because they don't want to be like all these people they see.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, how can we be ethical marketers? How can we use marketing as a force for good rather than this thing that turns you off? So those two things, perfectionism and then overcoming marketer ick, because you really need to be one yourself.
Such an interesting thing. It's one of the reasons why we run the Hero Show. Is I call it the marketer ick, but I think it's actually a bigger problem. We have an entrepreneurship ick and a profit ick. Mm-hmm. And like it comes right down to like the stories that get told culturally. If you watch movies or TV shows or books or the kids' TV shows, the bad guy is 80% of the time some variation of entrepreneur spills oil on ducks for money, right? And it's because those stories sell, right? The used car salesman who's gross sells. Right. Like he not maybe sells cars, but he sells to the media, right? The things that, you know, the stories that get told and get clicks. And so we have this perception culturally that being a salesman or being an entrepreneur or being someone who has a profitable company is icky, because those are the bad stories are the ones that make it through, the ones that make it through onto all the mass. And I've always sort of hated that, because entrepreneurs really like, just turn around and look in your office. Every single thing that's in your office, an entrepreneur touched at some point. Your chair, the floor, the paint on your walls, the computer that we're talking through, all of it was created by entrepreneurs. And our world is made better by entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs can only do that if they have a company that drives profit. So profit is like a driver of progress. And, you know, to that end, that's where like profit is a result of sales. And sales is taking someone who has a problem and connecting them with a solution that helps them make their world a better place. And so like, I know that's, it's a lot of words to basically say like, entrepreneurship and sales is not icky. It is actually the thing that makes the world better. And our ick, I think, this is my own personal theory on this, why I run the podcast, but it's, we have these negative stories in our head. And those negative stories are the ones that were like, hey, you don't have to live that story, right? Just because that's the one that's on the movie or one that's on the TV show or the one that you're thinking about when you're like, I don't want to be like that. Great. Don't be like that. Most entrepreneurs aren't. Most business owners aren't, right?
Yeah, it's so true. And it's also like, that's, you know, these are your experiences, like you're saying, TV, movies, etc. And similarly, if you have an actual real life experience, you buy a course or you work with a consultant or whatever and have an ick experience, don't let that color all of the other experiences you could have. You know, it's like saying, I went on a bad date, so I'm never dating again.
Yeah.
Or I went on one bad date with one guy who was not great to me, and now all men are bad. Like, yeah. It's just not true.
You have one argument with your wife, might as well just dissolve the marriage, right?
Right.
It's over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think it's really easy, especially, you know, when people invest a good bit of money into something and they really, and you know, that's really why I do what I do, is because I think that a lot of the programs out there are selling things when their students really deserve more than what they're being given.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I love instructional design as a service and why I got into it at the beginning is like, because people need the solution that you have. Right. And so like, and not just like a little bit, they like really need it and really want it and mm-hmm. are willing to spend big dollars and put time and effort into getting that result. And so like, if your course can't actually deliver the result for them, like that's a problem because mm-hmm. they need the solution. They're hurting. They're in pain. They have a problem that you can solve. And the difference between you being able to solve them and them not being able to solve it is how good you are at getting your expertise through some sort of a persuasive teaching mechanism.
1,000%.
Yeah. Preaching to the choir. But
I love it though.
For any of our audience who's watching this, if you have a course and you haven't talked to an instructional designer, I guarantee you, you will make more money, your clients will get better results, and the snowball that happens when your clients get better results is, it's one of those upcycle things where it gets better and better. So it's worth taking the time getting into. Which leads me to my next question, which is about your driving force. Right? So the flip side of your common enemy, you know, common is what you fight against. Your driving force is what you fight for. So just like Spider-Man fights to save, you know, New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information. What is it you fight for at the Creation Agency?
So our mission is to create programs that inspire, educate, and convert. And all three of those are really important and intentional. So first, let's think about inspiration. Kind of harkens back to the persuasive teaching that you mentioned, right? We want to inspire students to take action. We want to inspire them to become who they want to become, who they set out to become at the beginning of buying this program that they're into. So we stand for that. Also educate, simply like teach what you know, but like actually teach it, not just brain dump onto a video and put that in a portal and saying that's okay. Like actually having sound educational backing to it. And then convert, because I think that as business owners, we focus so much on the front end of getting someone in the door. But when you are intentionally converting people from your first offer into your second, into your third, that's when your business really begins to grow geometrically. And that's when you can do more good in the world, because you're serving people, you're serving them on a deeper level. You have more capital, you have more profit to hire more team who would love to work with your company. You have an ability to donate if you're doing charitable donations inside of your company. So we need profit. And the best way, one of the best ways to get more profit is to have the same customer, but have them buy multiple things from you rather than spending money on advertising to get them in the front door the first time. So that's why convert is part of it, is like we really do focus on that. How can we convert them from this offer into the next? It cross-sell? How can we do affiliate sales? Like, what are all the different ways we can create revenue streams from this one product? And so that rounds it out, right? Inspire, educate, and convert. And I'd say that's really what that's what I stand for and what we stand for every single day.
So I really love the convert piece. The Inspire Educate, of course, you have to have those. But the convert piece, I think, is sort of like a magic sauce. Because for me, one of the things when we were doing instructional design, we always talked about when you help someone solve a problem, what you have done is created a new higher level problem.
Exactly. Right?
And so my example that I always used to tell people is like, if you have someone who wins the lottery, before they won the lottery, they had money problems. After they won the lottery, they have money management problems. One of those is a higher level problem than the other, right? And if you don't help them solve the money management problems, they go back to having money problems, right? And so it's not just a good idea in your business to talk about this conversion piece. It is verging on a moral imperative.
Mm-hmm.
That if you help them solve this problem, you have to know what the new problem that you've created for them and know what the next step in their solution, like this, the chain is, right? Maybe it's your next program. Maybe it's a referral to someone who does the next thing for them, right? But you have to know, and it should be a part of your education. Like, you're here at the end of this piece. Here's the next set of problems you're going to run into now that you're at this new point in your journey, right? And here's where you should go next. Right. Mm-hmm. It should be a part of your education process. And if it's not, your education process is not doing its job.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. And I think you hit on something really important. And people are always like, oh, well, I can't solve that problem. Or how do I solve that next level problem? And most people, they're not going to solve all their clients' problems for their whole life. It's knowing who's that person that you trust, that you have a vetted relationship with, that you can hand them off to. Right. My clients are like, I need more leads now because I've kind of cleaned up my one-on-one calendar. I have more time to market and sell. And I'm like, you need a podcast. I know exactly who you should talk to, right?
Yeah, same kind of thing. Yeah. We do the same thing with our podcast things, right? The podcasts come in and someone gets all their content going and they're like, okay, I finally solved this problem where I wasn't creating the content. It wasn't showing up in front of my marketplace. And so now they're showing up every day. They're getting the organic growth that comes from all of that. But they're like, how do I make it go faster? I'm like, well, you make it go faster by pouring ad dollars on it. And they're like, well, can you do that? I'm like, no.
Right.
But I know who can, right? And here's the people. And like, I send them with a referral and a playbook, right? And the playbook is like, here's everything you need to know about how to run content ads, designed both for you to understand it and for you to be able to communicate with the agency about it. Mm-hmm. And so like, we've thought about that because that's like one of the next stage problems that we have is like, and we don't solve that problem, but we prep our clients so that when they go to talk to the other people, they know how to talk to them. They know what the KPIs that they're interested in. They know what the all the things that I can help them with, we help them with. And I actually brought in one of the agencies and we wrote that course together for them so we could hand it to them and so they could take it to their agencies. A lot of our clients already have a marketing agency they're working with, right? And so they're like, okay, so how do I communicate to them about marketing my organic content? Here you go. Right. Like, so we've thought about that in our business. And I think every business should, right? Because whatever problem you solve, whether you're solving it with a course or like we solve it with a service, you create a new higher level problem. How are you helping your clients solve that new higher level problem?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
I love it. So inspire, educate, and convert as a driving force. I like that a lot. I'll shift gears a little bit. I've only got two more questions for you here. This one is I call it our practical portion of our show. It's called the Hero's Tool Belt. And just like every superhero, has their tool belt with awesome gadgets like their batarangs or their web slingers or their laser eyes or, got a big spinning magical hammer that you can fly with. I'm going to talk about the top one or two tools that you couldn't live without in your business. Could be anything. Could be your notepad that you take your ideas on, your calendar, your marketing tools, a framework you use for your product delivery. Something that you think, I couldn't get my job done on a daily basis if I didn't have this tool.
Basic, but I live and die by my calendar. I mean, it's so basic. It's so freaking basic, but like my tasks are on my calendar. My personal stuff's on my calendar. My business stuff's on my calendar. I look at my productivity based on my calendar. I believe that you can see your priorities on your calendar.
Calendar, yeah.
And so
you want to know funny about that? Yes, funny about that is we're like 250 episodes plus into this podcast. Probably 80% of the entrepreneurs respond with my calendar as their number one thing they couldn't live without. And it's the same thing, right? I tell people all the time, I'm like, I live and die by my calendar. And my son's 14 now, and he just got to the point where he was like, I need some of your attention for things that are like outside of normal, like father-son stuff, because he's working on some business stuff himself. And he was like, his question to me was, how do I get onto your calendar? And I was like, yes.
I know. My mom has asked me that before, and my dad, and I'm just like, here's the link.
My son, we have a family calendar. And so like I do the whole calendar blocking thing. It's like, my business gets these hours and then like my family gets the rest of the hours. And he was like, how do I make sure that it goes on there? And I was like, you already have on your device, because we have the family calendar shared with everyone's devices. I was like, you have the family calendar. If you put it on the family calendar that you want to do XYZ with me, it automatically blocks everything else in my business, because that's got the first priority, right? Mm-hmm. Is my family. And so he was like, so if I go in there and I just say like, hey, I want an hour of your time to talk about this thing that I want to work on with you, it'll just show up in your calendar. I'm like, it absolutely will. So he did. And over the last couple of weeks, he's put a couple of like blocks of time on the family calendar with like what he wanted to talk about with me. And I was like, it's like training them young to run their life by their calendar.
Love it. Yeah, that's so good. That's so good. Yeah. I have two software mentions. One is ClickUp.
Yeah.
So as an agency, we work in ClickUp. It's our project management tool. Everything is in ClickUp. And then the other is something called PageProof, which allows our clients to review all of the assets that we produce, comment on things, add video if they need to do a Loom video, add that to it, and then they submit it, and it allows us to see version history. So it just really lets us track the reviews and revisions process with our team and our clients, which is so important, because otherwise it's like things get lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when you think about, you know, a 25 lesson program, that's 25 video scripts, that's probably 50 deliverables, that's thousands of slides.
A lot of stuff. I like that. We do a podcast video every week and a podcast audio every week, and then 6+ videos that we create every week. And so, you know, over the course of a year, it's a lot of content that we create. And so like our revision process, I'm going to have to check out PageProof and see if that would be useful for us as well. And man, we run our whole agency in ClickUp too. We are currently experiencing a problem with ClickUp. Hopefully it's not a long-term problem, but it is. Our particular instance has some sort of gremlin that is deleting due dates.
Oh God, that sounds awful.
Yeah. So we are both working with their support and exploring alternatives, because I'm like, this one thing, like if it doesn't do due dates, we can't do anything.
We can't do it. It's not going to work. Yeah.
It's not going to work. Yeah. But ClickUp is... it's fantastic. It's a great project management system. And like for anyone who's watching, if you don't have a project management system, project management systems like are just the best. And there's so many systems,
people, but yeah,
They're just the best. And you know, there's so many options from like Trello to Monday to Asana to ClickUp to Smart Suite. Like if you don't have a project management system, add one, your business will get more profitable.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's
totally great.
A huge thing.
Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
So one last question for you here, Jasmine. It's about your guiding principles, right? So one of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. So for instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever puts them in Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one, maybe two principles that you live your life by Maybe something you wish you know when you first started out as a new entrepreneur.
I would just say give first. Like the go-giver mindset is everything to me. And I think specifically like giving without expectation. Call it karma, call it whatever you want to call it. But I truly believe that it, like, if you add enough value, if you help enough people, if you're just open to support and show up for people, it will come back tenfold. And it might not come back tomorrow, but it will happen. So I really think like that's my number one guiding principle. And to what you were saying earlier about boundaries, sometimes I do probably cross a boundary of giving, quote, too much, but I'd rather do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I would rather get to the end of my life and be like, she gave too much. He gave too much.
Right. Exactly.
That's not really a bad thing to be known for. Maybe you made a little bit less profit than you could have made otherwise. But
okay.
It was a worthwhile trade. Thank you. Okay. But man, I know that I'm not sure how religious you are or not, but the thing that always popped into my head when people talk about that particular thing is the Sermon on the Mount from Jesus, where he talks about first give and then you shall receive. And there's several other things that he talks about, but I always look at those and like, I think it's a pretty common, and it's understandable too, but people look at the Sermon on the Mount as like, you know, the new commandments, right? We have the old commandments, you know, the Ten Commandments, and we have the new commandments. And I'm always like, that's not what he was doing. Right. He wasn't giving you new commandments. What he was saying was like, listen, I authored the universe. Like I wrote the operating system. And like one of the rules in the operating system says first give and then you shall receive. So like if you want to thrive in this operating system, like that's just how it works. I find that fascinating and true. And it's a good principle to live by. So
thanks.
Yeah. So I have I think that's a good place to wrap our interview. But I do finish every interview with a simple challenge. This might be interesting for you because of the type of work you do. I call it the Heroes Challenge. And I do this to help find access to stories that we might not find on our own, because not everyone else is doing the podcast rounds like you or I might do. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
Maybe it's because we got married last week, but my husband, Brad Hart, has he been on the show?
Has not been on the show, but he probably should.
He is a fascinating dude, and he has come from, gosh, like he has overcome so much adversity in his life, like way more adversity than me. Like just so much resilience, and I'm so proud of him for that, and I just think he's really taken some kind of a hard hand that he was dealt and just spun it into gold. And he's so giving and loving and just wants to see everybody win and willing to help anybody win. So I think he's for sure a hero. And he's got a thing for Batman. So he would also love the superhero theme going on.
Yeah. And I know, you know, inside joke between all of the, you know, those of us who know Brad, we refer to him as the captain. So that could be a superhero name.
Yes.
We'll see if we can reach out and maybe get Brad to come on the show. I'd love to have him on and get him to tell his story. But, you know, in comic books, there's always the crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So as we close, what we want to know is, where can people find you if they want your help to get their courses created? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak, and say, hey, Jasmine, I have some of those problems you talked about on that podcast. but I think more importantly than where or who are the right types of people to reach out and to light up the bat signal to ask for your help.
Yeah. So you can find me on jasminejonte.com is my personal brand website. And then I have creation.co, and that's creation.co. So it does have an 8 in there. And I'm also on Instagram at jasminejonte. So that's really my three. That's the three places to find me online. We really work well with folks who are one-on-one service providers of some sort, right? Doctors, coaches, therapists, consultants, and you're trying to get leverage on your time. Like if you're just really like, I want to get my time back, I'm in education in some way, or I want to add an education wing to add a profit center without having to continue to trade my time for it, like we can absolutely take the work off of your plate and create a beautiful, amazing product. So that's really who we work with super, super well. But we also work with, I'd say like 3 out of 10 of our clients are folks who have a flagship program already, and they know it's time to upgrade. They like, it's been years and it's still selling because it's a super juicy offer, but they want to increase the price or they want to see better retention or whatever it is. And so we can come in and really enhance and upgrade what you already have to take it next level.
I have a question for you, and this is a self-serving question. One of the things that I want to do, and it might just be another group of people that you work with already, is our agency, we have a done for you service. And so our done for you service is, it fits with a certain segment of the market. And we drive a lot of leads that don't fit in that segment of the market. And we would like to build a coursified version of our done for you service that would serve that segment of the market. Is that one of the markets that you serve as well?
We do. Yeah. Typically it's like a secondary outcome for people. So I love multi-purpose content where we do one product, but you can use it in multiple ways. And for my done for you service providers, like I'm thinking of CFOs and CPAs, accountants. We've done this a few times in that financial space. Podcast. We actually did a podcast program about this and she used it that way too. But it's all about, okay, so one, can I sell this standalone? Like what you're saying, I have leads. I'm using it as a downsell.
Yeah.
Basically. Right? Two, can I give this to my higher ticket one-on-one clients to help them through the process faster and to give them more education along the way? And sometimes there's a third, like, can I train my new team members using this program?
I haven't thought about that.
So it like, and there's some others as well, but those are the three most common, especially for done for you agencies, is let's do this thing one time. And it takes a lot of architect work on the front end, but you can meet all three of those outcomes, but one product.
Nice. I'm going to talk more, Jasmine, which is funny because I have a background in this stuff, but I still
am do this, bro.
I'm like, I could totally do that, but I don't want to do it anymore. Like that's, I have gotten to the point in my life where I'm like, listen, there's people who are really good at these things and I would rather just have them help me do it. So
you figured it out.
Yeah.
You're done figuring it out now.
I'm done figuring it out. I don't care anymore. Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience for this stop record button?
I just think make sure that go out and do your what I call your Girl Scout good deed of the day.
I love it.
Just help somebody today and that's all I could ask. Yeah.
A little bit. You'll get it back.
That's right.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.